to just give us a briefing, a status of where we are, what can be done to deal with the issues. Because in terms of the DPCI's mandate, they're responsible for organized crime and specialized investigation. So that means they must have facilities that is in line with that mandate. They can't have a situation where they've got buildings that's falling apart or the front door you can open with a scissor, or you can go through the back door. If the equivalent of the DPCI is the FBI, you must have the appropriate mechanisms and arrangements possible to do the job. And it's also an issue of maintaining esprit de corps within the unit. If you work in a good environment, you produce good results. So I think part of the engagement today is to see where we are, and we thank Public Works also for the availability on short notice. We also got an apology from the DG, Mr. Labantu, but that's fine. Mr. Soroto, thank you for heading the delegation. We appreciate that very much. I'm going to first ask the members to introduce themselves, and then we will go to the rest of the delegations present here today. Honourable Mula, you can start.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of the Protocol Committee. I thank you.
Oh, I'm Chindiza Mshomo, the Nalangandi Rivuani Mabeja, and a member of our committee.
Good morning, Maurice Redlinga is also a member of the committee.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Goeiemôre, ek is Pieter Groenewald en ek is 'n lid van die komitee.
We'll then ask the South African Police Services to introduce the delegation, then DPCI and then Public Works. Thank you. General?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain Management, SAPS. With me, I'm accompanied by General Matisa. It's just the two of us. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Sorry, Honourable Mula.
Thank you. The General didn't tell us his name and surname. He's just telling that he's a division. Thank you.
My apologies, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Ramahlapi Joe Mukwena, Divisional Commissioner, Supply Chain Management. I'm with Major General Matisa, Head of Facility Management within the Division SCM. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
General Matisa.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Tandazo Emeza, the National Head of the Hawks. With me, I'm having Brigadier Mahanjana, for planning and monitoring, and also the section head, Kenneth Mbenzi, for supply chain, and the head of support, Brigadier Mkhongo. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, General. And then we all ask Mr. Soroti to just introduce his delegation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. My name is Paul Soroti. I'm the head of the Property Management Trading Entity in the Department of Public Works. I'm accompanied by the head of divisional head of real estate management, Mandas Poli, the DDG of the PMO Construction and Project Management, Sam Tobakale, the head of Real Estate Information Registry Services, which houses the asset register in this Swansea Metis at the back. Paul Mashaba is our parliamentary liaison officer. We have Peter Moloto from my office. We have Komape Mokoba, who was working with SAPS on the condition assessments of the facilities. I'll be giving feedback on, together with Mr. Churchill Bunu, who was also part of the team that did the condition assessment. I think I've covered everyone.
Thank you very much. I don't know what's going to be the coin toss, who's going to start first. General, maybe let's get SAPS and then give Public Works an opportunity. Yes.
Thanks. Honorable Chair, we have one presentation and which Mr. Paul Serrato will be presenting. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think the spirit within which we conducted the exercise is we went throughout the country and did the condition assessments together. So this is a summary of the outputs of that. And I think where is it okay?
Where I've left out anything, I'm quite sure the colleagues will then fill in the gaps. So in essence, the presentation will cover a bit of a background, a bit about the leasehold portfolio, the condition of the premises that we saw, some recommendations. We'll deal with some challenges, and then the last two points are quite critical because they then deal with where we are in terms of the procurement reforms that we have implemented, particularly when it deals with the leasehold portfolio in line with the efficiency enhancement phase of our turnaround plan. Just a bit of background, the DPCI is currently accommodated in 45 buildings all over the country. These are co-located with SAPS units. 38 of these buildings are leased to the extent of 65,500 square meters, which is quite extensive. 21 of the agreements for leased accommodation will expire during this year. We have received needs assessments for seven, which we are currently processing for procurement and so forth. 14 are outstanding to ensure that once we receive these assessments, we can kick off the procurement in line with the space and cost norms as gazetted. As indicated, in most of these buildings, it's a co-occupation arrangement with the SAPS. A bit of a synopsis of the portfolio specific to the discussion today. The annual rental that we are paying is in the region of 79 million. We view that as material, and it really informs the kind of posture that we will be taking towards the landlords that have not supported us in terms of ensuring that we get quality accommodation for our clients. About 5% of these leases that have expired account to well, it's 5% of the portfolio. When one looks at it in a bit more detail, you've got 35 of the leases that are still running, 3 have expired, and the 3 that have expired is 3,000 square meters with a monthly rental of 352,000. The 35 that are still active, 62.5, which is the majority, with an expenditure of 6.2 million a month. The portfolio, in terms of when the leases expire, which is a very important way of also looking at it. We have dealt with the detail that the 3 have expired. In this current year, we expect 21 to expire. In 2018, 4 will expire. In 2019, 9, and then 1 in 2020. The reason we have timed our procurement reforms the way we have is because this graph, as you see it, is indicative of the broader population of our 2,500 leases that will, a majority of them will expire between 2017 and 2018. So in terms of the procurement process, which I will deal with towards the end of the presentation, we have totally changed the manner in which we do our procurement for leases to be in line with anyone that's running a portfolio of 2,500 leases. We went out on a competitive process to establish a panel of landlords that happened in November. The date closed end of February, and we are currently in the evaluation phase. We are hoping in the next month or two
panel of landlords will be active, which will make us a lot more efficient in terms of being ready to process this very tall chart of the 21 that are specific to this portfolio. I thought I must also just give you a slightly different perspective. I know now it looks as if it's not very clear, so I'll just give you a bit of an indication. So the majority of the space that we are talking about at 42%, in fact at 44%, is occupied by organized crime, 42% by DPCI. Provincial Commissioner is taking 8%. DPCI communication, loss management, and so forth, 4%, and commercial crimes, 2%. And it's also reflected more or less equally when it comes to the expenditure breakdown of that portfolio. We've also done an analysis which starts to show you more or less where those facilities are located. Between Pretoria and Johannesburg, you'll see 24%, Johannesburg at 19%, and so forth. So that's the regional distribution of that office space. If I can just get to the details now and the outcome of this assessment that was done countrywide with a team of colleagues from the different units. The realities out of this entire portfolio, only 10 buildings were considered to be in a good state, which is fit for purpose, with the remaining 28 ranging from poor to extremely poor. The most common denominator in all of these buildings is a lack of maintenance by landlords. Other serious concern is the overutilization or the overcrowding of buildings, which I think we'll deal with now, with respect to ensuring that the needs that we are receiving are appropriate relative to the practical requirements on the ground. Also prominent is a fragmented manner in which space is allocated to DPCI. For example, the components in one town occupying three different buildings with an adverse effect on productive time and records management. So again, that's one of the issues we'll deal with in terms of addressing the space allocation in a more structured way. In our assessment, the most affected offices are in Polokwane, Mthatha, Toronto, Bloemfontein, Upington, Alexander Bay, Belleville, Klerksdorp, Springbok, Pietermaritzburg, and Newcastle. The last point is very important, because we have picked up in this assessment that should these landlords not deal with these matters in a timely manner, we run the risk of inspectors coming to close those facilities. To that effect, I will also be having an engagement with the chief inspector of labor in the next 2 weeks to discuss not just this portfolio, but the entire portfolio and how we are going to go around trying to establish the processes to deal with potential hazardous accommodation. We have agreed that we need a joint committee that will deal specifically with these matters between SEFS, DPCI, and DPW to expedite the preparation of documents for procurement of alternative accommodation on behalf of DPCI. The committee will report monthly until the project is complete. Now, what is not coming through in that bullet is the extent to which we are engaging and working with National Treasury through the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. What we have found is in a lot of instances where we experience particular organs of state that have specific requirements, it is very difficult for us through a normal process to just find practical accommodation for them. And the SEPS portfolio is one of the portfolios that are seriously affected by that. So we have agreed and are working with Treasury to ensure that any deviations on practical means carry their stamp of authorization and approval, and we will be dealing with this portfolio on a portfolio basis as opposed to on an individual basis. And that will be effectively the work of this joint committee. until completion. The non-compliant facilities that we have identified, we've got no option but to put the landlords on terms and we'll give them deadlines, after which we will have to seek alternative accommodation on an urgent basis. This committee must also ensure that various feasibility options are explored and recommendations thereof are prioritized in the DPCI's future accommodation acquisition plan. Again, another important point. Security cluster units should be having a medium to long-term plan to be in owned facilities. So the issue of leasing is something that we must phase out in this portfolio, bearing in mind that there is a possibility that there may be financial constraints, and that is where we need to be extra diligent in coming up with the funding options for that eventuality. With respect to the expired leases, procurement processes have already commenced to acquire or extend leases where the premises are appropriate. And to avert a future occurrence of current accommodation challenges for the DPCI, we need to ensure that professional services, and I must say the head of PMO, Mr. Tobakali, is now also the head of professional services, that portfolio is under him, in ensuring that a standard specification guideline is developed for DPCI buildings. DPW, DPCI SEPs must prioritize the development of state-owned accommodation solutions for the DPCI. I thought I must just bring the committee on board with respect to some of the work that we have done, which is starting to change the manner in which we are procuring, which is specific to the procurement of leased infrastructure, in this case buildings. We have worked quite closely with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, and I'm confident that National Treasury will issue the standard for the procurement of leased accommodation, the framework, in fact, for leased accommodation before the end of this month, which will be ready for implementation in April. We have also made significant contributions to that. So any of these procurement reforms that I'm dealing with are in effect in line with the envisaged framework. Now, what drove us to significantly move towards a different approach to leasing? We know that the current process is ineffective, inefficient and ineffective, and that's the whole point of having a three-year phase within the turnaround that deals specifically with improving efficiencies. That is why our focus is on ensuring that the business processes are re-engineered, making sure that from a procurement perspective, we are reforming in a manner that is specific and relevant to the work of Public Works mandates. In the past, we would procure leases on a reactive basis as opposed to be purposeful and strategic. An example that I can give as far as that is concerned is a clear assessment that says when one looks at specific accommodation requirements, for instance, in these kind of portfolios, we need to start leaning more towards state-owned accommodation as opposed to just leasing accommodation because we need it tomorrow. Unfortunately, with the current processes, it can take up to 18 months to conclude a procurement of a single lease. Now, we were doing some basic calculations to say that had we not looked at the new procurement reform, we would be having to go out to tender for 120 leases every single month. In our benchmark of other countries where there are similar portfolios of leasing, leases are generally of a long-term nature linked to the infrastructure plan of government. So we appreciate that during the stabilization phase we had a dispensation of Treasury to allow us to issue three-year leases, but those were specific to stabilizing and ensuring that compliance levels within the department, particularly when it comes to leases, are dealt with. So those leases in terms of the two dispensations come to an end in 2017 and also 2018.
So you will see that our procurement cycles should be reduced significantly. The next point, also very interesting, that we have not been, as government, procuring accommodation in a manner that optimizes space utilization. I talk about archaic norms and standards, but in fact, if we had just complied with our own gazette fully, we would be a lot more efficient in the manner in which we procure. But the economy aspect of being able to just comply with those norms and standards will start to be the main driver in rising up to the challenge that the finance minister has brought to us, that says we need to renegotiate leases, we need to start reducing the cost of leasing. So we expect that we will significantly realign. In fact, we have issued a directive that says any new procurement must be in line with the gazetted norms and standards. I know the user departments, particularly at the senior level, may not appreciate the fact that the gazetted norms start to talk of a reduction in space of almost half in some instances for office space, moving from the current 32 square meters to less than 18 square meters. Issues around contract management, as we said, are currently insufficient, and we are busy building that competence aligned with the new reforms. Current rates are expensive and out of line with the market. We know that because we have done a complete exercise 2 years ago together with Treasury that told us that if one looks at the current point in time, in roughly 56% of the cases, 45% or 56% of those cases, we were finding that the average above market was on average 45%, which is extremely high, through no irregularity other than bad management over a period of time. So if you are unable to ensure that every 3 years you are ensuring your escalations are correct and you are consistently benchmarking to market, you will end up with that situation. That was the key driver of us establishing a research unit in February last year. And we have been able to cover the entire portfolio. When I talk about the entire portfolio, we are covering the entire portfolio of leases in relation to the specific markets that those leases are operating. So we started with Pretoria, we went to Johannesburg, we went to Durban, we went to East London, and we have now covered the entire portfolio. In terms of what we are doing to address this matter going forward, we've got sufficient information that gives us a market perspective and also gives us our own perspective in terms of how we should be engaging and negotiating on rates. For instance, in Pretoria, the CBD of Pretoria, we occupy 95% of the available developed office space in the core of the CBD. So in that instance, we should be the ones that are setting the rate. We have also established an executive negotiating team that is led by myself, supported by Treasury, and a few executives from both our side and the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, to ensure that we are able to follow through and engage with the landlords as far as the issue of rates is concerned. In determining a rate, you need to look at the age of the facility and the condition of the buildings and facilities, a point that is relevant to this portfolio. The landlords are taking these above average rates in some instances, but are not giving us sufficiently maintained properties. We know that there are many instances of inadequately equipped facilities procured. We have also, in terms of our approach, focused on ensuring that the matter of transformation is addressed in the sector. And to that effect, we've had many engagements. So we've been working with the financial institutions, we've worked with the sector institutions, the REITs Association, South African Property Owners Association, which are the majority owners of property, commercial property in the country. we have seen market sell-offs to new entrants at inflated prices, which have contributed to some of the situations where we see today where a building is acquired at above market with the person that is acquiring the building not able to keep up with the maintenance program and expecting higher than market rates for the buildings that are not necessarily in a good condition. We have seen instances of fronting, which we are now dealing with. We have obviously having to deal with poorly maintained properties, high tenant installation costs, and landlords not complying with the registration requirement on the central supplier database. So in essence, those are the reasons why we felt it very appropriate and urgent that we enter into immediate procurement reforms.
Sorry. Yes, Zero. What I wanted to say, can I say something after the presentation?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I just want Public Works to finish and then we'll give them ample opportunity. You're welcome.
As indicated, we have been working closely with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer within National Treasury, and we have embarked on these reforms to ensure that the leasing framework is also developed. The objectives of the framework as it stands, we are wanting to reduce government rental expense, ensure efficient and effective delivery of accommodation to user departments, shorten turnaround time on delivery of accommodation, and ensure compliance to the Constitution and the Treasury prescripts on procurement. The panel that I referred to earlier will not exceed 3 years, although the contracting period for lease agreements, we can go up to 9 years, 11 months, in line with the user requirements. We will ensure that the panel is reviewed once a year to allow for new entrants. And once approved, we expect it to come into effect next month. So we have approached it in two main phases. The first phase is really to ensure that we establish the panel. As I indicated, that's the advert that closed on the 28th of February. That involved ensuring that successful landlords are captured on an accommodation register. The biggest advantage for us is it gives us absolute sight to the entire sector in the market. So it strengthens our access to information in terms of how we relate and benchmark. The landlords, through a system that we have developed internally, will be able to, on a monthly basis, indicate what accommodation is available. You will see when I get to phase two, we will be able to progressively ensure that the user requirements are linked to what is not only available out there, but it starts with prioritizing state-owned facilities that are on our asset register. The panel is not to be restricted to private landlords only. We have had state-owned entities, tribal land and trust. The issue of state-owned facilities or state-owned entities is absolutely critical because this also enables us to have a consolidated view of what Intersite, for example, owns, what Transnet owns, what AXA owns, because we lease from those entities as well, what the post office owns, where we require accommodation in those areas as well. With respect to phase two, we will be able to procure from the panel specifically on a competitive basis, using the strength of research information that we have accumulated through the establishment of the research unit. By the way, the research unit will then be going in its second phase, where we are actually developing it into an institute which will be working closely with the universities to ensure that our research strength is strengthened, because that's what we require. We are managing assets that have tremendous value to government. Client needs will be progressively matched against available listed accommodation. Landlords with accommodation requirements that meet what we are looking for will be invited to participate on a competitive bidding process. Functionality, price, and preference shall be used as an evaluation.
allocation criteria, not forgetting the imperative of transformation. I alluded to the process where we deal with deviations, and National Treasury Instruction Note 3 of 2016-17 effectively requires that any deviation from a competitive bidding process is approved by National Treasury. Nature of leasing environment more often than not requires deviations from competitive bidding process where it is impractical to go out on a competitive bidding process. It does happen that the requirements in our instance are so specific that you, for practical reasons, you may not be able to find a ready-made police station, for instance, should it be required in the next month or two. Minister of Finance enjoined that the leases should be renegotiated as part of a cost-saving measure adopted by government. We are finalizing the instrument that we will use, but we've already established the executive negotiating team. We have been in communication with Treasury, and we are waiting just final approval for the team to commence its work. The department has also approached National Treasury for deviation to renew expired leases where clients are still in occupation and renegotiate current leases to realize savings. And that is particularly important because for as long as we have not finalized the procurement reforms, you have got a few months of leases that have expired which need to be dealt with but cannot be dealt with in the new reform until we have finalized the evaluation of this panel of landlords and started the new regime. So to that effect, we have been in constant communication with Treasury as to how we deal with those. So when I speak about the three expired leases, they will in essence follow this customized process together with National Treasury. I've dealt with the composition of the negotiating teams, and we are of the opinion that once this is dealt with, we will have a much more effective and shortened procurement process and substantial savings for government with respect to this portfolio. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks for the presentation, General.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I just want to add to the presentation. I think as a user department, it is worth mentioning as the end user department. We don't have a role insofar as leasing is concerned because the policy dictates that it is the sole mandate of the Department of Public Works to acquire the accommodation for the end user. Insofar as the conditions of this office space or buildings, we have no say but the Department of Public Works. And I also want to say, I think the end user in this case, user department, which is DPCI, insofar as I'm concerned and insofar as I have seen the conditions of offices, they have a reason to complain. One does need, you know, the improvement. But also we must also bear one thing in we must keep one thing in mind. When you list some of these conditions, they are in a good condition. Over the time, the landlord tend not to maintain these facilities. The maintenance of these facilities is really a challenge. Like when I'm visiting these facilities, I can't say anything because I'll have to complain to the Department of Public Works, who are the sole department who has the responsibility or the mandate to say maintain this facility. I cannot directly engage with the landlord as the end user. Also, the rates that we're paying towards these dilapidated conditions, they are really questionable. One cannot really sit down and relax and say everything is okay. They are really questionable. I think I'm happy when my colleague here has also raised this issue of rates, and then so that we can in future go into an open bidding process where at least there will be value for the money that you are paying. And also I want to support him insofar as the buy versus leases concept. I think the government must move now towards buying instead of leasing. But the question also is, are we going to be capable or be able to maintain those buildings that we are going to buy? Yeah, I think that's all what I wanted to add in this presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. General
Lameza,
anything to add? Are you fine?
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, I'm fine with the presentation and the comments. Thanks.
Right, members, let's go immediately to the questions. Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. I've got, I don't know, three or four questions. What is the current status of the lease agreement of the Pinnacle building, and what is the challenge in concluding the lease agreement of the Pinnacle building? My second question, in slide, oh, there's no numbers here, on the expiry of the leases, you said 21 will expire in 2017. Have negotiations started on a new lease agreement? My third question, on condition of the lease premises. You said the most common denominator in all buildings is a general lack of maintenance by landlords. What steps are taken for the landlord who is not doing his job or maintenance? Because you can't keep paying for an irresponsible person. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question would be a need to understand why, in the first place, why members were allowed to occupy a condemned building, meaning the old SARS building. And again, are they still occupying that old SARS building? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I mean, I think for me, it's shocking that it's been allowed to reach this point, and that we're only seeing interventions, welcome interventions, and progress. But it is, it boggles the mind that we have this situation. My question, it's, a lot of it has been already covered, especially relating to the decision to lease versus buy, and I'm happy to hear that there's a move towards that. But the general also points out a valid aspect of that, is that facilities maintenance and management then still falls within the Department of Public Works. And I want to know whether there's any talk or discussion or move towards making it in-house, where the South African Police Service has its, it becomes a component of their budget and their functional responsibility. Because to use an example, in Vivda Park, Vivda Brug Police Station in Centurion, the SAPs own the building, or the building is owned by government, and Public Works came to paint out the cells, the holding cells. Four of the holding cells, four of them were closed because Public Works is painting the cells. And it's quite a busy police station. They arrest and hold about 100 people a week or a weekend, over a weekend. But they only had two operational cells. And when I asked them, well, when do you expect this to be finished and what's happening here, they said to me Public Works apparently ran out of money. So they're not painting. So you have a situation where there are four cells not in use in a very busy police station. And so I think we need to start discussing or looking into, and I'm looking forward to comment on that, and a response to that, making facilities management and maintenance an in-house responsibility of the South African Police Service and the DPCI. Thank you.
Mbele. Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's fairly clear that we're looking at an issue of the basics not being adhered to, because I hear the inputs about the revised process going forward and the proposed changes to be made, but whatever the limitations of the current framework and the current process, if the basics of that were done properly, we wouldn't have nearly as bad a situation as we have now. I mean, 10 out of 35 or 38, because three oil expired, being habitable. I mean, if it was maybe only 30% uninhabitable for particular reasons, that's a bit more reasonable, but 10 out of 38, essentially, is a very, very bad state of affairs, and it comes down to either poor planning or poor management. And, you know, so for example, the bullet points about how there's components in one town occupying three different buildings, that's a planning issue, Chairperson. I mean, surely it's known how many personnel need to occupy how much space in what town, and unless there's simply an unavailability of a building in that town to meet those criteria, and maybe that's the explanation we need to have when that kind of challenge is put up, that's just poor planning, because you know what the needs are broadly, and you should be able to match what is supplied to that. Similarly, I've got a question which I think was partly covered by the Honourable Mabija about the expired leases. I just have a question now as to what is currently happening with the personnel who are occupying that office space. Are they still there, therefore the occupation is out of lease, or are they in limbo somehow? Because really there shouldn't be any reasonable excuse for a lease to expire without being able to transition to whatever is required next. It's the most sensible thing ever. I mean, my current lease for where I'm staying is expiring end of June. I know that. It's March now. I know I must have something in place at least by 2 months before. It's just, it makes sense. So I don't understand how you get that kind of process breakdown unless there's a capacity issue within the departments of Public Works and the PMTE in particular. But I'd just like to understand, how do we get to this bad a state of affairs, given that if the basics were covered and done properly, you could avoid and prevent all of this? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I don't think there's any misunderstanding that we all agree this is totally unacceptable. Totally. I mean, how can you expect people to do their work if the finding is that out of 38 buildings, only 10 are actually suitable? The other are very poor conditions. I mean, in fact, in a certain sense, I can make out the case to say that we are undermining the Constitution, because the Constitution says the people of South Africa has the right to be protected. And you can't protect the people if you can't allow the people to do their work. And really, I'm shocked from Public Works as far as this is concerned. The question is quite fair to ask, how did we end up in this? So, Chairperson, firstly, my first question is, according to the presentation, it says some of the challenges is that it can take up to 18 months to conclude a new lease. Can we have an indication? Because of the 38 leases, 21 is going to expire in 2017. What is the progress on those leases? Will it be renewed, or whatever the case may be, in time when they expire? Or are we going to wait another 12 months or 18 months? The other thing, Chairperson, I'm not clear what is the real picture, because on the presentation from the DPCI on slide number 4, it says DPCI offices are located in 51 leased buildings and around the country. In public works, it says that DPCI is currently accommodating 45 buildings. So can we just, there's a discrepancy there. DPCI says 51 leased buildings. If I understand it correctly from public works, it says 38 leased properties. So can we just get clarity on that, Chairperson? Most important is, how long are we, can we have a time frame? When will the people be in a proper buildings where they can be accommodated to do their work? Thank you.
Thank you, members. Yes, I think the 73.7 rate of unacceptable buildings is, I mean, it's just not on. Because indirectly, and maybe General Meza can confirm that, if that is affecting our ability to fight crime, this is very, very serious. Very, very serious. Because DPCI specialized investigations. They work with syndicates, organized crime, transnational agencies. And if we do not give them the appropriate tools and accommodation to do their work, they won't be effective. That is just the bottom line. And it will then have an hampering effect. So I just want to get a sense of what is General Meza saying. Is the current state affecting your ability to do your job? And if that is so, I mean, we don't have to come up with a resolution now, but we will have to escalate it in terms of the appropriate framework. But we can't have that. Maybe the second issue is putting the landlords on terms, because I think that is maybe the picture here. That you've got 73% of the buildings being not usable. I mean, it clearly shows you that the terms process is not existing, or it is just on paper. So I just want to know, is there efforts, and I think we take note of the second part of the presentation, where you want to go, and go looking forward, I mean, that is the approach, and we support that, but ensuring that, you know, there is at least movement and alternatives available, and then also the big question of these leases for 2017. It affects a lot of facilities. In terms of your new approach of finding accommodation in terms of the core business of a unit, will those 17 buildings fit the bill, or will it be just emergency accommodation for some time, and then, you know, maybe in a few years you will again revisit? I just want to get a sense. The 70 new leases, will this now include your new approach, or is it going to be business as usual? That's the questions for the first round. Over to the panel. General Lameza, can you also come in? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. To answer the question from the Honourable Chair, really, this state of affairs is affecting the operations of the Hawks. As I said last time, that if you go to Belvin, that building can fall at any time. People can die at any time in that building. If you can go to the Eastern Cape and Limpopo, in front of the door, people are selling amagwinya, the fat cookies. And if you go to Namtata, this is a building of the Hawks here, and the Chinese are renting in the same building. It's pathetic. When the members are parking, they are parking together with the Chinese people and the Pakistani. It's terrible. Bad. Thanks.
Over to Mr. Sirote. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson and members, I think I will agree with the committee that we are equally concerned about the state of affairs, and indeed is not acceptable. And I will explain it in this way. We are quite aware that the department embarked on a 7-year turnaround plan. So by no means have we reached the 100% of what we ought to be doing. So the context that I speak about, for instance, when I say currently it's taking us up to about 18 months, it can take up to 18 months because Remember, we come from a history where we did not specifically fine-tune our requirements. We did not specifically sit and ensure that we understood the market that we were requiring the accommodation from, and in some instances we would pay more than what we ought to have paid. Negotiations would take an extensive period of time. Issues of tenant installations would be a very difficult issue for us to deal with, because those were areas that we had not necessarily thought through when we were acquiring accommodation in the past. I specifically cite those issues because those are the specific areas of intervention that we have been deliberately fixing within the organization. I then said, the reason the leases are expiring at the moment is because we've got a bit of a gap in terms of doing away with the old way of doing things and the implementation of the new way of doing things. Now, we went out on a tender that closed now and at the end of February. The framework only comes into effect at the end of March or April. And it's within this new regime that we will then be making acquisitions in terms of the phase one and the phase two specifically that I indicated in the presentation, which is a lot more efficient because the landlords are already pre-qualified through an open process which has now closed in February. So most of the work will have been done by then. Now, when one looks at it in that particular context, it's a fair question to ask then what happens in the interim. Now, we've got specific mechanisms of procurement that we can use, which we have agreed with Treasury, to go out on a negotiated procedure basis to ensure that we are responding specifically to the urgent requirements and practical requirements of these units. That is the work of the committee that we have agreed with the colleagues, needed to be immediately set up to ensure that that process is driven. Now, part of that process involves an engagement led by SEPS and DPCI that says, these are my specific requirements. It's called the needs assessment. I indicated that we have received 7 of them. So we will work with the colleagues to get the balance of them. Once we have them, it then triggers the procurement process. Now, with the wealth of research information that we have and the understanding of the processes and the engagements that we have had with the sector at the moment, we are in a much better position to be able to be a lot more responsive to those specific issues. The 3 that have expired and those where we know specifically that the conditions are unacceptable are the ones that we must go off immediately first now to deal with from a procurement perspective. We can't just go and vacate those premises, we know that, when there is a lease agreement in place. We have agreed with the colleagues that we will immediately issue notices for the landlords to either comply with the conditions of the lease agreement or for us to consider steps to terminate. But we need to give them a month or so. So we will start that process in terms of what we have agreed in terms of the lease agreement. And we are quite happy to provide regular feedback to the committee in terms of how we are doing as far as that is concerned. I think when the colleagues from DPCI were making were communicating the number of 51, it includes everything. I'm just dealing specifically today with the leased accommodation. So I think it included the other state-owned facilities that are there. I wanted to also deal with the issue of planning and bed planning and so forth. I think for a number of reasons, we must concede that the planning has been an issue. And let me tell you where it starts. It starts with a basic compliance to the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, GAM. It says all accounting officers must submit a user asset management plan annually, which a copy comes to us and a copy goes to Treasury. Now, in the context of the reforms that are happening, that's one of the elements we needed to ensure happens. Now, if you look at our annual performance plan and report for last year, it was for the first time that we managed to sit all the colleagues around the table across all the departments and have a user asset management plan. So we now have those plans. That is why we can speak with a bit more confidence to say that we are starting to understand what the user requirements are. I think SAPS was one of the first few that gave us their user asset management plans, understanding that this is a massive operation. Okay. And I think we have been able to respond to some of the areas, and we do concede that there are still problems within the portfolio. I must appreciate that us, together with the colleagues, have been very collegial on the matter. And I think you will see that when it comes to the implementation, we have managed to, in a very short period of time, visit each and every single facility, and we have a report to that effect. I've summarized some of the issues here. We are concerned, and we are being very frank with the committee to say that we have got our work cut out for us as far as this is concerned, and we are responding to the issues that have been raised. How did we get here? I think when Minister took over the portfolio, I think it was around 2011, and there was a commissioning of the Technical Assistance Unit of Treasury. And one studies the diagnostic report that was presented, which then triggered the turnaround plan. We were really a department that was in a lot of trouble. Now, the context and the quantum, over and above the 2,500 leases, in fact, we've got 2,600 and something leases. We have the state-owned portfolio, which is 92,500 properties, which is a very big portfolio. Now, if a portfolio of that quantum is in trouble, you need to be very specific about the turnaround plan and what you are doing. We kicked off the turnaround plan with what we called the stabilization phase. Now, if I give context to that very tall bar that deals with the expiries, it's effectively those leases that are expiring in 2017, where it's the end of the 3 years since we received that National Treasury dispensation. That is why these are coming up for renewal now. Now, that instrument that Treasury provided this department went a long way in doing two things. Firstly, stabilizing the lease environment, regularizing those leases, but also enabling us to be able to structure ourselves in a manner that enables us to come up with very specific reforms that are specific to this kind of a portfolio, which exists nowhere else. To give you a bit of context why I say nowhere else is the biggest listed property fund only has to deal with 480 facilities. We have to deal with 92,500 facilities plus 2,600 leased facilities. It's a massive operation. So the 3 years with respect to the stabilization phase is done. We are confident that we have stabilized the department. The audit outcomes are indicating significant improvements, and further to that, we now have an asset register. We are currently in the phase of efficiency enhancement. As we speak now, we are rewriting the business processes. That project will finish at the end of September. As our CFO likes to say, we are fixing the car as it's moving. We do accept and concede that there are some areas that are neglected, and I think the reality of the situation is when it comes to priority portfolios such as these ones, it then becomes a lot more difficult to deal with. But we need to pay attention to them, and I'm very grateful to the colleagues for the work that we have done in the last month or so. In essence, what we also have is a question that says, yes, we can go from leased accommodation to owned accommodation. What then happens from a maintenance perspective? We received the asset register end of March last year, and it started to give us a very good understanding of what we are dealing with, the extent of the impact of not having a structured maintenance program over many years is what we are now having to deal with as the team within the PMT and Public Works now. Now, we needed to ensure that now that we've got these assets, we know where they are. How should we be maintaining them? We spent the last year doing a couple of things, making sure that we have the right person that leads our facilities management unit. We've got an experienced former electrical engineer who was a senior executive at ESCOM. He's leading that portfolio at the moment. So we have agreed with him over time that we needed to have a facilities management strategy. We've got that. So now for the 92,500 facilities, we have an approach from a facilities management, of which maintenance is a component thereof. One of the major outcomes of the programs that are coming out of the strategy is as follows. We needed to do condition assessments on some of the largest facilities that we have, and we have already started that process. And we also needed to ensure that we finalize our strategy not only for the buildings and facilities, but also started to understand that the building and its components have different requirements. Let me give an example. A building brick and mortar structure, reasonably you can take a 50-year view on it from a maintenance and a useful life perspective, but a lift you can only take a 10-year view on it. We have categorized lifts, we have categorized heating, ventilation, and air conditioning HVACs. We have categorized boilers, chillers, etc. under a category called critical components that require their own specialized programs, whether it's procurement, whether it's maintenance and procurement of maintenance, and overall management, how do we do it in the different facilities. For instance, in 15 facilities, we have already taken a view that in those facilities, we need a total facilities management contract because we can't do it piecemeal. So that work is already has already started. We then had a specific zoom in on the lifts portfolio and agreed that we would have to get an entire population of all lifts everywhere. Now, the colleagues, I know if I give the example of John Foster in Johannesburg, it's a very sensitive one. There's supposed to be 11 lifts, but only about 3 or 4 work at any particular point in time. Now, it happens because a lift is a mechanical instrument. You need to service it at every particular interval, and you need to overhaul it at every particular interval. I use that example because you need to be very specific when you are dealing with lifts. Okay. So we implemented a program in Pretoria as a pilot which said, we are going to take an inventory of all the lifts as part of this critical component strategy. So I'm just zooming down on the lifts as an example. We will take all of these things and make sure that we are working closely with the original equipment manufacturers on the one hand. But we will also strengthen our ability to manage the original equipment manufacturers and the maintenance contractors that are linked to the portfolio of lifts. So we utilize the services of a lift management and maintenance entity, which then helped us to build that competence. So we established a program office that does just the lifts for the pilots of Pretoria. So where we are at the moment, we now have a situation whereby each and every lift is accounted for on a dashboard on a monthly basis, reported. We have a report. It will tell you which lifts, the performance of each and every one of those lifts. It will tell you on average the performance of the different manufacturers. It will tell you which lifts are in need of urgent and critical maintenance and which lifts are in need of extensive upgrades. That is specific to our own portfolio relative to lifts. Now, if you look at it in the context of a functioning environment, if your lifts work, your HVACs work, your boilers work, your chillers work, you've got a functional building. You've got a functional facility. That is the strategy that we have adopted going forward. So we've, in terms of our lift strategy, for example, are going to be rolling out that pilot to the rest of the country, and the impact, I'm sure, will be reported back on. Because I can tell you now, the performance of the lifts in the Pretoria Regional Office are the best they've been in a very long time. I think the issues that are specific to the Pinnacle building and the SARS building I'm going to need help from my colleagues at the back. So they will then just come in and just give a specific indication of what the issues are there. And then I can conclude there. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Sirota. Yes, sir, you're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Chair. With regard to the Pinnacle Building, that is the late Judge Musa's office, what I can say is that the department is at its final stage with regard to the conclusion of the lease. However, there are gray areas whereby the landlord is not understanding the terms and conditions of the lease contract. But he has requested the department to give him time to discuss it with his legal team. And he promised us that he will come to us by next week. So what I can say to the house is that the lease is at its final stage in terms of finalization and make it official. We're just waiting for the landlord to come back or revert to us with regard to the terms and conditions, that because he mentioned the issue of the duration of time or the duration of the lease contract, whereby he's not in agreement with the three-year lease term contract that we're giving to him as a department. So we're waiting for the landlord to come back to us with regard to the terms and conditions of the contract.
Other responses, please, gentlemen. Back, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. I'm going to speak to the old SARS building in Belleville. Currently, the regional office is busy with an interim solution to keep the building habitable using our day-to-day maintenance budget. But in short term, we have received needs assessment from DPCI, and we are in the process of actually finalizing norms so that we can go out and tender and procure alternative accommodation for them. That is a temporary solution. Long-term, SAPS has actually agreed that they will make funds available from their capital works program to actually implement a holistic revamp on the building and thereby ensuring that once the building is fully rehabilitated, SAPS can occupy a state-owned facility again. To that effect, we are sitting with SAPS actually tomorrow the 9th and on Friday the 10th to finalize their revised allocations for the 2017-18 building programs. And SARS building is one of the services on that particular program. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. General?
Thanks, Chair and honorable members. I just want to bring the following to the attention of the committee. Once a lease agreement has been entered into, taking the landlords to terms, it's a lengthy process. It's not something that you can do it in 2 months or 3 months. It can even take 2 years. By the time you finish the legal process, the lease is also finished. I just want to bring that to this issue to the attention of the committee, because one of the turnaround strategies that we are embarking on, we're saying we are going to take the landlord to terms. I mean, that is a lengthy process. It is a lengthy process. No, thanks. Thanks,
maybe on that same example and the response from the gentleman about the Belleville building, I mean, it was widely reported already last year in the media, public knowledge, August, September, about the challenges, you know, the life-threatening situation under which DPCI members must work. Now we hear today that it's still, you know, day-to-day maintenance in terms of the budget. There isn't really movement, and I think that is the story we're hearing, and I mean, that's the concern. If matters are raised, if matters are brought to the attention, why this long time span? And it doesn't seem that the members in Belleville will have any short-term solution. So I just want to get a sense of that as well. Other responses? Yes, thank you.
I just wish to underscore on the SARS issue what my colleague was saying. Is at the end of the day, it's the process of allocating specific funds for the capital upgrade program is what the process we are sitting with SARS, I mean with SEPS, to finalize. Now, the allocation of funds for something of that nature unfortunately does take a bit of time, and it's a process that must be done within the prescripts, and I get a sense that that is under control. I agree with the chair, it's taken time, but the reality is there was no money for a capital upgrade immediately after it was announced.
Responses? Members, I'll come back to you. Welcome also to Anu Mungklongo. Good to see you, sir. Let's get the other responses. Right, let's go to the follow-ups. Yes. Anu Bija, Anu Bele.
I'd like to indicate my disappointment because it's like this thing is long overdue, and the response leaves too much to be desired, because see, on way forward there are a lot of will be established, will be put on terms for non-compliance, a lot will be that this will be done, this will be done. Until all the time people are suffering due to insufficient accommodation, written off by labor, those buildings, and you who are responsible, the public work, where you work, your offices is like in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I just do not understand. You wake up in the morning, you go there, you attend meetings, there are huge budgets, etc. But it cannot have a spoke of public works, because this committee has got a lot to complain on with public works. For instance, it's not just DPCI accommodation. We have, let me not mention them because this is DPCI issue today. I don't understand, where were you when people suffer, say in where offices, the provinces are most affected? Bulukwane, Umtata, Thohoyandou, Bloemfontein, Upington, Alexandra Bay, Bellville, Klerksdorp, Springbok, Pietermaritzburg, and Newcastle. Under your watch, all these things are happening. And when you come here today, you are telling us will, must, this and that and that. I don't understand. What's wrong? What's the challenge? We are here to assist. We in fact, we are not witch hunting. We'd like you to tell us precisely what your problem is in public works. Even the fact is complaining, DPCI complaining, and those things are unacceptable to me, of course, and as a committee, I believe. Something's wrong. Just try to do introspection on the modus operandi of using your budget that we approve every year to see that people are working under healthy and favorable conditions. Because if the building has been written off by the national labor, why are people still working in those offices, in that building? The next thing, it will be, hey, it has collapsed. Hey, people are running around trying to cover up and so on. This is not acceptable, really. Just tell this committee what your problem is and what's the way forward, not what you have told us already here in black and white, because you are used to be told things that are written in black and white and not being implemented. Why must these conditions be like this under your watch? Please tell us that. Not there will be, soon there will be, and so on.
Thank you, Honourable Bija, Honourable Bailey, and then Honourable Mklungu.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to follow up on the points that was made by the General and which comes through in much of the presentation, which is the issue that there's difficulty in putting the landlords on terms for non-compliance. Is that a regulatory issue? I'm not familiar with the legislative framework in this environment, so I'm not sure what the Act sort of governing tenants and rentals exactly says. But I would like to think that at least the contract that Public Works signs is fairly clear about the terms and conditions, the obligations, and so forth of both parties, so that if there is a certain standard of maintenance and the quality of the facilities that the landlords are meant to maintain, then Public Works does have the leverage to fairly quickly put those landlords on terms to say, if this is not put up to standard within 3 months, then the contract becomes invalid because you have not fulfilled your end of the bargain. So the government can't be held ransom to a landlord if they are not fulfilling the terms of the contracts and their end of the bargain. So I just want to understand, why would it take 2 years? Because surely violation of a contract legally essentially voids the agreement because one person is not playing along. So just to understand what the difficulty and the challenge is there, please.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable
Thanks, Chairperson, and sorry for late coming. I wasn't really aware. I was pacing my meetings for 14th or 16th, according to that, but I wasn't really aware. Only then good people just informed me now. And I'm sure that you will pardon me because I'll have to leave almost early as well. I've got other commitments that I've already scheduled. But, Chairperson, to come to the question in point, because I never really thought that the Public Works is really part of government machinery, because of the way it functions, to me it leaves a lot to be desired. And that's why finally you had this big Nkandla gate, because it would be like a department without a driver, if I may put it. One, I'm failing to understand. You know, when we visited Free State, for example, the very important organ of state, VIP unit, was without facilities, and I personally, because of my health condition, I could not even go up there. And I wondered how these boys actually then respond to the emergencies. And you will be told, I hear what General is just saying, you know, even only if in Public Works this government is not going to root out this thing of underhand money, the laws of contract should be holding everyone accountable to swift response. Because we are not beggars to these people. These are just private property owners. If they fail to meet the requirements of the state obligation, take out your money and leave them. There are so many people, man, with good buildings than even the... But because of material embedded interests of corruption, shame God will come and help us all. Because really, that's what you must actually then be clear about, is that this department is a highly compromised department, most. Millions and millions of poor people of this country were wasted in Nkandla for no reason, as if then you were nowhere to be found. Nobody even... What a shame, this department. Today, Chairperson, we are dealing with, we are intervening on matters of DCP or DPCI. Even our own parliament here, according to our meeting we held, I think last year, about national security key point, top generals of the police were saying everything is with public works. You wonder whether these public works during financial year, they are able to align budgetary framework with the requirements of the state, which they are the major provider to. Now, but because we are waiting for underhand and all these corrupt things that compromise even politicians, decisions can't be made. At times we need to be very, very robust with the truth. I, for one, I hate just massaging, telling the half-truth for television so that you will sound nice. It's corruption that is holding this department to be so dysfunctional. And we must then be able to say, what are the directors in each region doing? Where are the inspectors who ought to be inspecting the requirements of each building according to each state organ's requirement? I was with, Jefferson, I was with one of the senior bureaucrats of the U.S., a very efficient organ of statesmen, commanded now to be somewhere in terms of their distant wars, responding within a second. In South Africa, you will wait until you go to an old age pension without one thing being met by this department. Useless. Thank you.
Mula, you will be the last, and then we'll go to responses. Thank you.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, let's say you are not with about the DPW handling issues, because I can't understand generally when you say you can't help the person responsible for the maintenance. No, it's wrong, General. But you are keep on paying him. It's corruption. No, we are not it. And all the answers that we were giving, Chairperson, I don't know if why they didn't prepare for themselves. They were shocked when General Ndlemeza tell us that the building in Bellville is falling apart. They were shocked. That's why they were doing this presentation. No, let them go back and do the program of action. Because I don't see if they are sitting there meetings with the SARS and the PCI and the Department of Labor. Like, who's inspecting all these buildings? Because you can't have the people who are working like DPCI. People are selling Facebook. No, Chairperson, how can we do that? Because these people are dealing with high crimes. How can we do that? They are parking with the Chinese. Chairperson, no. It's unacceptable. We are sorry to say that, but it's unacceptable. People are selling Maguinya here. DPCI, they have files dogs running around. They are parking with the Chinese. You don't take this department serious. You don't take DPCI serious. It's wrong. You must go back and do the program of action and come back. Because all the subs... But what... We are even complaining about where we are staying, the houses. Public Works is not helping us, Chairperson. No, it's not helping us. We are sorry to say that, but we must talk here. We are sorry to say that, but please go back and make a program of action. Because you can't tell us, like now, he said next week, they said the landlord said next week will bring, I don't know, next week. And next week is got the, next week is the 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, the days of the week. If you are saying next week, you are telling us nothing. When you are saying you are going to meet on the 9th on the 10th, yeah, we are hearing you. But if you say next week or next month you are going to start a program or are going to, next month it's nothing. You must tell us on the 15th we are going to start a program of this and we are going to end it on the 28th of November 2017 or when. That's when you are talking. Let's be fair, guys. We are not harsh on you, but what we are doing an oversight here. We are doing an oversight, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. Yes, I think going forward, maybe, and maybe then the final responses from the department as well as DPC, I think to get an assurance from Public Works that in terms of the 17 buildings that there will be proper processes in place, and also the question of inspections, because that is, I think as the members articulated, that's an ongoing core business issue and needs an issue of attention. But I think the biggest, let's say, dilemma, and I think a lot of the members put it on the table, is the issue of those buildings that might be life-threatening. Now, we don't need another life issue, the many or crisis, to highlight that government didn't act in time. I mean, that is the biggest risk from an oversight perspective. If a state organ knew that is the situation, but there wasn't proper responses, and there comes questions of accountability in another issue. So I think we need also assurance that those buildings that the General also indicated last week, that is really very problematic and can't house offices, what is the interim plans? Because day-to-day the maintenance is not going to... If there's an incident, say for instance at the SARS building in Belleville, I mean, it's going to be a severe crisis. And we can't afford it. I mean, it can't happen. So we need, there must be contingency plans. So I think that is what we're also looking for. What is your contingencies? If, for instance, you still need 2 or 3 months in certain locations, is the contingencies in place to ensure that people are properly housed? So I think that is the issue. So let's get the final responses. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would just like to ask that perhaps even if it's outside of the meeting, we get certain specifics so that we are able to respond specifically to the committee. And I'm referring to issues where the committee members are clear on service failure examples. But more concerning is issues of corruption. Because we have got an anti-corruption unit that deals quite comprehensively with instances of corruption. We've also got a proclamation, particularly on leases that was in place as part of the turnaround, that deals with instances that are being reported. I think to make a generalization is really not fair. That has to be a response that, or rather a direction that is very specific so that we are able to deal with it, and the machinery, including the state machinery, can deal specifically with the items that have been raised. I can confirm to the committee that as far as I'm aware, that these are operational issues. They are not issues that are a representation of any of us wanting to be behaving in a manner that is inappropriate. With respect to the SARS building, Chairperson and members, I wish to, having had the inputs, request that I report back on how we are dealing with the funding matter before the end of this month. And I'm asking for that purely because I think once we have clearly dealt with the details, we would have to then reprioritize certain funding to prioritize this issue to respond to the concerns of the members. And that's a discussion that only, not only is a Public Works one, but it's a matter that we need to agree with SAPS to see where we get that additional funding. And I will ensure that meeting, Chairperson, happens within 7 days. With respect to issues of minor maintenance, the colleagues at SAPS have also got access to a delegation for minor maintenance. I think it is also a recurring issue that came out through the present the comments of the members as well. And one of the things that we are working on is seeing if, and I think I'm working through your office, Remokwena, is to say let us try and increase that so that we are able to allow the SAPS to attend to some of the other maintenance issues as and when they arise. That will help us to be a lot more efficient. I wish to also emphasize again the point that in relation to where we are from a turnaround perspective, we have not got every inch of the country covered with respect to all the portfolios, notwithstanding the SAPS portfolio, but across the board. But I can assure you we've got a clear plan and we are implementing. We committed last year that we would overhaul the procurement process for leasing, and it involved a number of departments, including Treasury. Now, we have worked with Treasury first and foremostly to ensure that we have got a leasing framework that is specific to procurement. That draft has happened. The consultations with the provinces, in fact, happened in the last month. Treasury will issue that framework, and they've indicated to us they will finish it this month and implement it for effect 1 April. We have committed to say that we will ensure that we improve the efficiencies in the procurement of leasing, whereby in a few instances we have had to take a very long period of time to negotiate one lease through a process. And by the way, the context of the 18 months is as follows. If you go out on a tender and nobody responds, or everybody that responds is not competitive, you follow a particular, or is not responsive, you follow a particular process before you can re-advertise again, and that takes time. In the business of property and lease procurement, it is not the procurement of basic commodities that are generally available. There are many factors that affect it, and we do have those challenges. I've indicated in my presentation that is the primary reason why we have gone the approach of a total revamp of the procurement. On the issue of implementation, I have indicated that the advert for the panel of landlords has now closed in February. We developed an accommodation management solution, by the way, which is not a system that is available off the shelf because we have a specific set of requirements that are not necessarily equal to anybody that operates in this level of context. We committed to develop the system. We finalized the system. There was no tender. We developed our own people, our own IT systems. People developed a prototype within a period of 1 month. The system is ready to operate. Once we have finalized the process, the process closed end of February. We are currently evaluating. Once we have appointed all the panels of the panel of landlords, we start to load them on the system, and we'll be ready to start demonstrating the efficiencies. There is a clear timeline, and I think I've given that timeline as well, as far as that is concerned. Chairperson, there is also another reality, and this reality is just linked to a different approach to the way that is required, to the manner in which we manage the appropriations that are provided for this portfolio. The significance of what I have just said is as follows. I mean, we finalized the asset register at the end of March last year. We are currently doing extensive condition assessments to assess the impact of not having a structured maintenance program in the past and what it requires for each and every asset that is on our books to maintain going forward, as an example. Now, the truth of the matter is, when the numbers come back, it's going to be clear, and it's apparent to us today, that there will not be sufficient funds to maintain the entire portfolio with the current levels that we are receiving from a funding perspective. We are also cognizant of the reality that we cannot go back to Treasury and say we require more money. We may not get it. So we are looking at very specific areas of our portfolio so that we get the best value out of the assets for government. Let me explain myself. We have agreed with Treasury, for instance, that when the PMTU was developed, it would operate on the basis of cost recovery. So effectively, you've got your asset base, you must maintain it, but you must also get fair value for all your land and buildings as and when you transact, whether it's leasing, whether it's a selling off of the assets. Okay. That's the one thing. So what happens is, at the moment, we are in discussions with EXA, for instance, where they want to extend their airports, and we've got adjoining land. We don't donate the land. They are funded for their operations. They need to pay us fair value. The money that we get needs to be plowed back into the functioning of our facilities. The programs that I spoke about on critical components require to be funded. We are in discussions as part of one of the SIP projects for the acquisition of a part of the land that is in South Bay Island, which is strategically positioned for the extension of the container terminal for their capacity. The discussions we have had have not been about a donation, they've been about the fact that it's for that reason that we need to take those assets and make sure that whatever we get for it is plowed back into the functioning of the portfolio. On the leasing side, we have said we need to ensure that we adhere to space norms. We need to ensure that we realign to market. The numbers, if we were to just realize a saving of 10 or 20%, it's between 200 and 400, no, between 400 and 800 million rand a year. That is a lot of money that we are pacing ourselves and targeting because we want to do not only urgent and critical maintenance, ongoing sustainable maintenance, but also ensure that we participate actively with respect to a strategic acquisition program of government. A specific example is we have acquired the SEPS head office, which is a consolidation of many leases into one area, over 110,000 square meters in Pretoria. The savings on that over 10 years is over over a billion rand for government. Now, that is the kind of money that we are saying we are wanting to access to ensure that we support the efforts of turnaround. We fund turnaround in a very practical manner, and we ensure that we continue to sustain the work that we are doing. I think immediately of urgent action is really for us to reprioritize and make sure that we come up with the money for that SARS building. Thank you, Chairperson.
Generals, last word from you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. What I was actually referring to when I'm saying I'm taking the landlords to terms, it's a tedious process or it's a cumbersome process. I think each and every one of us knows very well each and every contract is governed by terms and conditions. If one of those terms and conditions are breached, it's not a question of saying, yeah, you have failed to maintain the drainage system, or you were supposed to have painted these offices, you failed, therefore the contract is terminated. No. Litigation is a process. You must first write to the landlord, he must respond, you must explain. I'm talking from experience. I'll give an example. In all the sites that we've handed over, for example, to the contractors, which they are currently defaulting, you can't just grab at that site and take it back. It's another legal process that you have to follow, just like when you taking this landlord into terms. It's a process. It's not like you breach this contract, therefore I'm terminating. You must give him a chance, and it will end up in court. Landlord won't disagree and say you're terminating a contract, fair enough, it's fine. They will take you to court, and that becomes a lengthy process, including the court role now. Thank you very much, sir.
Very short, the members I want to really close. I'm very short. No speeches there. I'm just very short. Bija, Honorable Long, and then Honorable Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Sirot, it disturbs me. Mr. Sirot, I heard you saying that you cannot go to Treasury to ask for more when in need. Can you please explain to me, because I don't understand why you say you know you cannot get anything that you are in need of, whereas we have things like Eskom who are being given, pumped with money. They are always asking and they receive from treasury, whereas in some places there are people where electricity is free 7/24, but they go for more and they get more. Why? Make me understand. I don't understand why you really said that. Make me understand, to make, put me on an easy comfort zone.
Yes, Honorable Slongo.
No, thanks. I just wanted to raise this as a point of clearing or demystifying the issues with Mr. Sarot. That, you know, as responsible public representatives, when we have a head of DPCI coming to us saying, you know, I am actually at your mercy now, these are the challenges I've got with the public works, How would you, even yourself, respond to that? I am talking about this because I come from KZN. General knows very well, he was grilled badly here about the situation of violence, killing of our people. Even right now, the municipal manager counted down 9 bullets. And you expect the general to unleash his forces there. Instead of him commanding forces on the ground, he has to do an unrelated task of kneeling before public works. Now, what do you expect from us as public representatives is to say, hey, we beg you. You are a public servant and you are expected to have outputs, and you must command your own forces at regional levels so that we stop this anarchy. I wasn't pleased about what happened in Nkandla with all the oversight committees of this parliament, as if then there are no leaders at managerial level. But if then those people are compromised, you will have this. Look, man, I hate to actually waste my time in these committees saying that I'm playing oversight, when in fact I'm just playing delaying tactic in order to get my money payment at the end of the month without any tangible output for the people that I claim to represent here. I cannot do that. And it must be pretty clear with you, if also as a manager of this department, which actually holds the entire responsibility of the state to function promptly and effectively. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just very quickly, I would like to suggest to the general and to the management at Public Works that I think they are being too soft in enforcing accountability for landlords and for contractors. I don't believe that it should be a first write a letter, get a response 3 months later, respond to their response, their response to your response, your response. And then eventually we end up in courts. Sue them first. From the get-go, just get to court straight away and you make the first move. Take the first offensive. Because they know they aren't in a defensible position because they aren't adhering to the contracts. So don't wait until we litigate much later and then see what happens. Sue them straight away from the outset. And swift action can work very effectively, because I recall a time when in this metro there were departments, provincial and national and parastatals, who were way behind in arrears with their rates accounts to the city. City cut them off. Water, lights, done. You're not getting any more service until you pay. Boy, did they pay like that. People respond to accountability, they respond to real material consequences for non-performance. Can I ask and suggest we start doing that now? Be hard, be firm, be direct, take no prisoners. Thanks, Chair.
Right, I think we must conclude, and I want to thank the members for their participation, and also Mr. Sarote and the generals. I think it was a necessary meeting to have, and maybe going forward, I think this common cause from the committee that it's unacceptable, I mean, that 73% of the buildings is in a poor, extremely poor condition. because we need members of DPCI and SAPS, but especially DPCI, specialized units, to have the proper accommodation to do their work effectively. If we want to have to move to a situation where crime is dealt with effectively, DPCI must have the environment to do it properly. So we really call on Public Works to ensure that we deal with the issues that was raised by the members, and I think we welcome the fact that there's now a joint team dealing with the issues. So I think we must fast-track that process, but I think it's really a clarion call. Those buildings that are a threat to human life, there must be an alternative strategy. And if we can have a report by the end of April to this committee on what is the progress in terms of the new leases, the 70 new leases, but also those buildings, that we can have a picture before going to the budget process, because we must do BRRR recommendations to the House, and I think it will be important that we take note of, give you further opportunity for input. I think we take note of the input that you've given. I think we agree with the future plans of the Department of Public Works. We think it's the right way to go, and understand it's an interim phase that's currently taking place. And we also welcome the fact that there is now a new list of new tenants that can be used by DPCI. But I think DPCI must be supported. And the only institution in government that can do it is Public Works. You are the sole custodian of the portfolio. So I think there must be closer cooperation with SAPS and DPCI, and that we deal with the issues, that it shouldn't become a crisis. There must be the necessary attention given to it, because otherwise we're not going to solve the issue of the ability of DPCI to do their work effectively. And as the portfolio committee, that's the bottom line. We want DPCI to succeed. The only way they can succeed is if they've got the tools and accommodation and the necessary support. So we will monitor that. So thank you very much for your participation. Honourable members, just to indicate, next Wednesday, IPET and SAPS, as well as the firearms matter in the second part. So thank you very much. Thank you for attendance.